God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. We've got people from across the pond as well. All over the world is represented in here tonight. Newcomers, is there anyone in your first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. If you would like to raise your hand or wave at the camera or otherwise make yourself known, first 30 days. All right. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous states that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight, we are extremely excited to welcome Paul McHugh from Rockaway Beach to tell his story. After Paul shares, we're going to allow him a break and call for some announcements in the Seventh Tradition, et cetera, at the top of the hour. And we'll ask him some questions. So feel free to chat those to the user questions. I've been excited all week to have my brother Paul here. To share with us. I don't want to take up another minute of his time. Paul?
Thank you so much. My name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic, and it's good to be here with you and good to be sober. I want to thank the Civil Actions Group for giving me the opportunity to come here tonight and do service. It's a privilege and an honor, and one I don't take lightly. It was so nice to see David again. I was down at your group there for your group anniversary a couple of years ago. And was made to feel very welcome, and I feel the same way tonight, you know. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to welcome you. They're probably the greatest singular event in my life, walking in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I'm not here to sell AA tonight. It sells itself. It's attraction, not promotion. But I will say this, you can't get where I am tonight from where I came from without Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an impossible journey. As you can see, I'm sitting here in my car tonight, and somebody said to me recently, Paul, you know, you're sober a while and you're back living in your car. And I say, well, the good news is it's a better car, you know. So for no other reason, if you're new tonight, stay sober. If you go homeless, you go homeless in a better car, you know. But all joking aside, I know I don't look old enough to have a two-year-old daughter, but I have a two-year-old daughter at home and she's getting ready for bed. And believe me, she's an infamous Zoom bomber. So it's much better for me to be here with you tonight. And I'm very, very, you guys really make you sing for your supper. I'm really nervous about the ask it basket. Because I remember being at a meeting one time, and some of the questions you get asked are, I was at a meeting one time, and one of the questions was, Paul, you're from Ireland. Do you know how old Danny Boy was? You know what I mean? Like, that was one of the questions. Another one was, Paul, you're from Ireland. Can you recommend any good golf courses in Ireland? So I don't know how spiritual those were, but I know you guys are not like that. You'll be asking very spiritual orientated questions like, Paul, you're sober a while. How have you stayed so handsome and humble after all these years? Things along those lines, you know. But anyway, rule number 62, we don't take ourselves too seriously. And I mean, it's great to be here with you. What's the old saying in Alcoholics Anonymous? It's the only place in the world that you can walk into a room full of strangers and start reminiscing, you know. And I feel in this Zoom world, you know, we're socially distant, but we're spiritually connected, you know. And when this first went down, I'll be honest with you, I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is the worst thing that ever happened to AA. You know, I got to be sitting knee to knee with another alcoholic with our books out. I got to look across the room and see an alcoholic with skin on. You know, how is this going to work, you know? Like it says in the back of our big book, contempt prior to investigation, you're looking at it. And in actual fact, thank God, God's in charge. As Emmett Fox says, the captain is on the bridge. Because rather than this being the worst thing that ever happened to AA, in the words of a British statesman, Winston Churchill, This is AA's finest hour. The way that Alcoholics Anonymous has stepped up, Dave and I were talking before the meeting, the way that Alcoholics Anonymous has stepped up and found a way of keeping carrying this message, my message might even keep me sober, carrying this message to the still sick and suffering alcoholic. I am so proud to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous right now. It gives me a front row seat for the very best that humanity has to offer. And the way that AA, the world threw at us, whatever it threw at us, we don't complain. We don't throw the toys out of the stroller. We just find a way of making this work. Unbelievable. I'm not saying this is an alternative to regular meetings. I'm just saying this is what God has asked us to do right now. And we are doing it with grace and dignity. And I'm so proud to be a small part of that. And that's what I want to say to anybody that's new tonight. You know, come right into the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Even in this Zoom world, come right into the middle of AA. I have a disease that wants to tell me I'm different, I'm unique, nobody understands me. I have a disease that wants me disconnected, wants me apart from you, and I got to ignore that and come right into the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. In one of our chapters, it talks about Chapter 4, about the old ancient theory of the world being flat. And in some respects, the AA world is a flat earth. If you go to the age of Alcoholics Anonymous, you go off. And the thing about going to the age of AA, you don't even realize you're there till it's too late. And if there are any signposts, by the time you get to the age of Alcoholics Anonymous, they're in a language you don't speak anymore or you don't understand anymore. So stay right in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and ignore the negative messages from the brain and come in here with us where we speak the language of the heart, you know. And that's what I love about AA, you know. We speak this language of the heart, you know. And that's, you know, we do together what I can't do alone. That first, Oliver Wendell Holmes said one time that he went away for a spiritual retreat and he was going to meditate on the Lord's Prayer. And he said he never got past the first word of our. And I feel like that a lot of times in Alcoholics Anonymous, the we. We do together what I can't do alone. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and A is the only place I know in the world where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And everybody in here tonight has got worth and value. But this is God's economy, and everyone in God's economy has got worth and value. Whether you're sober one day, 5 days, 5 years, whatever. I was at an anniversary a few weeks ago. The woman was sober, the first African-American woman to get sober in AA, Liz B. She was sober 68 years. And she ended her talk like she always does with those words, without you, there's no me. And that is so true in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So everyone has worth and value in Alcoholics Anonymous. So don't think you've got nothing to offer. We need you. We need the new person, even in this virtual world. We need the new person in Alcoholics Anonymous. A is like a backwater pond. I'm sitting here looking at Jamaica Bay across the Manhattan skyline. And the tide comes in twice a day and it goes out twice a day. And we need that fresh water coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. If we don't get that fresh water of the new people, the water becomes stagnant and nothing grows in stagnant water. I die, you die, what's the point? It even says that in Bill's story. Why do we have our meetings? We have our meetings to show the new person our way of life, how we have recovered. A is not for me to come and give you a little spiritual weather forecast of how my day went today. It's for me to help the next alcoholic. I'm looking across at that Manhattan skyline, and I'm a bit of an AA nerd. Sometimes there, I've went in on Bill Wilson's anniversary night, December 11th, and I've stood outside that building that he got sober in. Used to be called Towns Hospital. It's an apartment building today. But I've stood outside that building. And I don't know what happened in that building. But something happened. It was a change that changed everything, you know. A paradigm shift. And Bill Wilson, by his own admission, he talks a bit about it in his story. And he says that on that last night, that night he had that spiritual experience in his hospital room, and the room filled up with light, and he felt, you know, the power of God within him. But he had this thought. I believe he was divinely inspired. And I mean, what I mean by that, I think he had a thought above his own level of consciousness. Does Einstein say that a problem cannot be solved at the same level of consciousness that created the problem? I believe he was divinely inspired. He had this divine thought. Surely there must be other people out there like me. I wonder if my experience could help them. And he had a vision of a chain of drunks, one drunk helping another, not just around New York or the Northeast, a global thing, right from day one. And that's what I asked myself. How strong is my link in the chain? Is it strong to the people that went ahead of me? And more importantly, is it strong to the people coming behind me? If someone comes to me tonight and says, Paul, can I go to that place that you're talking about? Can I comprehend the word Trinity? Can I know peace? Absolutely take this journey with us. We didn't have the 12 steps, but before Bill Wilson even left that hospital, and it says in our literature, he asked Dr. Silkworth if he could talk to the other patients. We didn't have a 12th step. And it says in our literature, with serious misgiving, they allowed it to happen. You can just imagine, the jokes write themselves. Hold on a second. You mean the guy that's been detoxed here 3 times, who just got detoxed the other day, he wants to talk to the patients? But it says with serious misgiving, they acquiesced. We didn't have a 12th step, but Bill Wilson was practicing the principles of the 12th step. I wonder, by helping you, will I be able to stay sober myself? And that's so true in my life today, even in this virtual world. And I see it here already. I got to find a way of doing this 12th step in my life to stay connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I'm not working the 12th step, I'm working an 11-step program. An 11-step program for a guy like me is nothing more than a self-help program. It's a highly evolved self-help program, but it's all about me. And don't think you have to be sober a long time before you can help somebody. That's a wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. AA will meet you exactly where you are. You don't have to go and meet AA. You don't have to go to the 50-yard line to meet Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous will meet you exactly where you're all tonight. All it says is in our book over and over, please make a start. Wherever you are tonight is the place that you can start if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous. My friends on here, my friend Bob from Brooklyn, and Danny lives in Northern Ireland, but he's from Brooklyn originally too. And Mal, another guy, Mal from Northern Ireland, and Francie too. And but Bob tells a great story. He was at a meeting in Brooklyn many years ago. Bob told me this story, and I think he regrets ever telling me this story because I've told it so many times, but I love it. Bob was at a meeting in Brooklyn here one night many years ago, and the meeting was going on, and it had been going on for about 20 minutes. And the door opened, and in came this woman who was visibly drunk, and she was stumbling around, and the meeting took a pause, and someone helped her to a chair, and they got her a cup of coffee, and they said, you're more than welcome to be here, but the meeting's already started, and just sit quietly, try to identify with the speaker, and someone will speak to you after the meeting. So she sits back, and the meeting starts up again, and about another 20 minutes go by, and what's the old saying? Is it odd or is it God? In walks this man, and he's visibly drunk, and he's stumbling about a bit, and happenstance, or maybe not happenstance, he happens to sit right across from this woman. Now, she's sober 20 minutes, and she gets out of her seat and goes and gets him a cup of coffee and gives him a cup of coffee and says, if you sit quietly and listen to the speaker, someone will talk to you after the meeting's over. She's 20 minutes sober, and that's the extent of her experience, strength, and hope. Sit quietly, drink your coffee, and someone will speak to you after the meeting, and that's what she shared with this man. If that's not the personification of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know what is. That's a perfect example of the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. So don't think that you've got to be here with X amount of time before. Believe me, AA will meet you tonight exactly where you are. And I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor said that this the other day, and he almost said it as a throwaway line, and I've been like grooving on it. He says, like, when I come into AA, I don't realize this, but I hope I do. I check my thinking at the door. And even in this virtual room, I tap into the collective thinking of the group. And by doing that, you sure your little bit, somebody shares their little bit. And, you know, it's the old John Kennedy line, a rising tide lifts all boats. And by me checking into the collective thinking of AA, by the time I leave the meeting, my thinking is a higher level because I checked into the collective thinking of Alcoholics Anonymous. The we is always greater than the I. I love that aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous and the language that we learn to speak here. You know, and I love the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous here, if you're new, it's so front-loaded on the solution. We come into Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcohol is only mentioned the first half of the first step. We put down the drink, and immediately Alcoholics Anonymous gets us into the solution. Yeah, we know you drink. We know you burnt your life to the ground with drink. We get it. Well, let's get you right into the solution. Half a step on drinking, 11 and a half steps on solution. If I wrote the steps, it'd be 11 and a half steps on drinking and maybe a half a step on the solution. Thank God the first 100 were much more spiritually connected than I will ever be. So don't think, and I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we're all in this together. There's one lifeboat called AA, even this virtual lifeboat. My disease would tell me, especially when this all went down, hey, get your own little COVID lifeboat. No, doesn't work. Oh, it's not too far to the shore. Maybe you could swim yourself. No, doesn't work. I got to stay in the lifeboat of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's none of my business who's sitting next to me. That's God's business. It's my business. I'm willing to help that person or be helped by that person. You know, I mean, look around. We're all here. And I love that about AA. Gender, color, creed. When you say an alcoholic, I know enough. I don't need to know anything more about your backstory. I know you've experienced terror, frustration, bewilderment, despair. I know you put a drink to your lips and the tears roll down your face and you drank it anyway. I know that loved ones pleaded with you not to drink and you drank. And I know for goodness sake, at the end of my drinking, I drank against my own will. And that's why we're all in here together. We understand each other. You say you're an alcoholic, as I said, I know enough about you. You know, we're all here. You know, what's the old James Joyce has got a line from one of his books, and he's talking about Dublin. And he says, here comes everybody. Look around, we're all here. We got one thing in common. And all that other stuff that might seem important in the newspapers, on TV, and wherever, it's all left outside the room where it belongs. And we talk about our common problem, our alcoholism, and our common solution, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if we do that, we will always be connected and we will always be united. I love that fact of Alcoholics Anonymous. We come here and we're connected through our brokenness. You sure how you're whatever, you share with your difficulty, and we all come together here, we're united in our spiritual brokenness. I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous. And like my story, it's no different really than anybody else's story. Ernest Hemingway says that all writers tell the same story, and I think all alcoholics tell the same story. We might have come from different walks of life, we may whatever, but we have that thing in common. Those two questions in chapter 4, We Agnostics, it asks two questions that separates us from the normal or the heavy drinker. Can you tell when you're going to, I'm paraphrasing, can you tell when you're going to drink again? No, that's the obsession. Once you start drinking, can you tell when you're going to stop, which is the allergy? No, and that's what separates me from the normal heavy drinker. At the end of my drinking, I couldn't tell you when I was going to drink. And once I took a drink, I couldn't tell you when I was going to stop. Why am I an alcoholic? I have no idea. It used to be very important to me at one time in my life to know why I was an alcoholic. I mean, really, I'm looking across at the Manhattan skyline. It's a beautiful day here in New York. An azure blue sky, low humidity. You can see the Manhattan skyline so clear. If God came down out of the Manhattan skyline tonight and sat in this driver's seat and told me exactly why I'm an alcoholic, nothing would really change in my life. I still wake up tomorrow morning, I hope. I would pray, meditate, do my readings, make the calls, take the calls. Nothing would really change in my life. But if I was to speculate, Carl Jung, that was a great friend of Alcoholics Anonymous, said that alcoholism can be characterized as a low-grade spiritual thirst. I was looking for something. Now, I know you have to drink alcohol to be an alcoholic. I understand that. But believe me, was I a symptom looking for disease? Was it nature? Was it nurture? I don't get into that. All I know is there's been two turning points in my life that are so clear. The first one was drinking booze, and the second one was walking in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I realized both times I was looking for the same thing. I took that, I mean, I worked in a crazy bar. It's about 2 miles from where I'm sitting right now. I bartended the last 5 years drinking, and I bartended the first 12 years in AA. And believe me, it wasn't the Oak Room at the Plaza. This was a sort of a bar you got thrown into rather than out of, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I often say, you know, if you want to see a full set of teeth in this bar, you needed 32 customers, you know what I'm saying, you know? And that includes the women that come in there. You know, what's the old joke? Most of the women that come into this bar, they look like they did their makeup on a trampoline. You know, it's over here and it's back over here and it's over here. And this is the sort of crazy bar I worked in. But even in a bar like that, I realized today that most people drink because what alcohol does to them. Our book even talks about it. A social lubricant, fire to mind, a sense of companionship. I drink because what alcohol does for me. Alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for the normal or even the heavy drinker. One drink changes how I feel about me, you, and this. And that's why I'm going to come back for more. I don't care what the consequences are. I mean, you don't have to go to too many open meetings and you'll hear a story like this. The first night I drank, I blacked out. I vomited all over the place. I got brought home. I went to bed. The bed was spinning. I woke up. I didn't remember anything that happened the night before. I got in trouble with my parents. And I couldn't wait to do it again. Now, if there's any non-alcoholic sitting at the meeting, they're going, no, I'm not going to do that again. But we're nodding our heads because we know we're going to do it again. Now, we don't know why. I can't articulate. I can't describe what alcohol is doing for me. All I know is it's doing something for me that I cannot do for myself. I took that first drink. You've heard the different metaphors. Black and white to color. For me, it was like that invisible curtain that always seemed to be between me and you was removed. I felt connected to you. I felt a part of rather than apart from. Don't you hear that all the time in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous too? We all say that. We're sitting in a crowded bar and feeling totally alone because alcohol will boomerang on me. And what it did in the early days, it won't do it the last days. But in the early days, I thought it was bringing me closer to you. And for the first time in my life, my skin started to fit. And I was 15 years of age. And I've heard people tell different stories. They had it, drank for a while, and they were somewhat successful, were able to finish college, maybe even be successful in their working lives. That's not my story. I took a drink at 15, and I came out of the starting blocks, and I went flat on my face. It was like lighting a firecracker, stand back. Alcohol, I mean, I used to love playing soccer. I played for a couple of local teams. Some of the guys I played with went on to play over in England and have journeyman careers at a professional level. When I started drinking, everything went on the back burner. The whole next 15 years of my life, my whole raison d'etre, my whole reason for being would be alcohol. Getting alcohol, drinking alcohol, talking about the last time we drank it, talking about the next time we drank it, to the point when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I remember talking to my sponsor one day. We're just having casual conversation. I'm 30 years of age. I'm a couple of months sober. And he says, Paul, what do you like to do? I don't know. Well, do you like to go to the movies? I don't know. Well, do you like to read? I don't know. Well, do you like to go? We live on the beach here. Do you like to walk on the boardwalk? I mean, I was like, he says, oh, this is good. You're a tabula rasa. You're a blank slate. My whole life was all drink for 15 years. I couldn't have told you. I don't remember ever in my life before I came to AA doing one piece of introspection of who I am, where I'm going in life, what my goals are. The minute I took drink, that became my primary purpose for the next 15 years. And I hitched my wagon to a store called Alcohol, and I rode it to the precipice. Now, I love, on Christmas Eve, there's a little quirky thing of mine. I get my wife and kids to bed, and I love to sit up at night and get them all to bed. And it's a little Christmas tradition of mine. I'll put on the old version of the Christmas Carol, the famous Charles Dickens novel. And I love the old version with Alistair Sim. You know, I'll sit up there. And the premise of that, it's almost allegorical of life. And the premise of that is there's the three ghosts, the ghost of the past, the ghost of the present, and the ghost of the future. When I took that first drink at 15 years of age, if the ghost of my alcoholic future had tapped me on the shoulder and said, Paul, I want to show you something. Look in that window. You see that guy drinking around the clock against his own will? You see that guy who's pushed away everybody who mattered in his life? You see that guy who has quicksand stretched around him in all directions? That's you in 15 years. I'd have said, you're out of your mind. You must be thinking about somebody else, but that's exactly what happened. In The Merchant of Venice, Shylock just wanted 1 pound of flesh, not this disease. It'll take your job. It'll take your car. It'll take my wife. It'll take my kids. It'll take the shirt off my back. But what it really wants is me 6 feet under. There's a lot of terminal diseases out there. I'm not familiar with those, but I'm familiar with this one. Alcoholism will kill me stone dead, with or without booze in my body. I don't need booze in my body to burn my life to the ground. I almost done it in AA because I wouldn't accept these spiritual principles. But you couldn't have told me that at 15 or 16 years of age. And as I said there, my life just fell apart in short order. But you see, I talked about introspection. I'm an alcoholic. I never want to look in. I'm a finger pointer. I grew up in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. I blamed where I lived, where I didn't live, this. That's the story of my life. I'm always looking for an outside fix for what's really an inside job. And I'm blaming this. If I can just get, I mean, it's no coincidence I'm sitting in America with an Irish accent. I was a runner, a long distance runner. Somewhere out there, you know, it'll be different. My life's falling apart in Northern Ireland. Before I'm out of my teens, I'm a daily drinker. Before I'm out of my teens, I'm taking morning drink. And I said at a moment to my father, typical alcoholic grandstander, I said, Dad, sit down. I got some bad news for you. He says, what is it? I said, I'm going to America. And don't try and talk me out of it. He says, talk you out of it. I'll help you pack. On you go, Columbus, you know. And I came out to New York, and I was a little, I know there's some new people on here tonight. I should tell this little joke. It's hard telling jokes on Zoom. It's like telling jokes in the graveyard at midnight. You're not really sure if anybody's laughing, you know. But for the people that are new here tonight, there's a little known fact that Columbus was actually an alcoholic. Because when you think about it, when he set off, he didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. When he got back, he didn't know where he had been. And he got a woman to pay for the trip, not once, but twice. So you know Columbus must have been an alcoholic. So once again, it's midnight in the graveyard, but I hope you found that with a little humor in that. But so I came over to New York, and was it different? Absolutely. I could finally drink the way I wanted to drink, which was like an animal. And like Bill Wilson says in his story, I went down a ski jump. And I started, I hit my first hospital at 25, and an alcoholic seizure. By the time I'm 27, I'm a periodic alcoholic. I go on these long drunks, and then I try to stop myself, but I couldn't stay stopped. Because you know what? Until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had nothing between me and the first drink. The thought of a drink would become the obsession to drink. What's an obsession? An idea that crowds out all other ideas, and I would find myself drinking. And once the clock would start ticking, I had no way of stopping the clock. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have something between me and the first drink tonight. Use people with this program, give me something between me and the first drink. And that's what I want to tell the newcomer here tonight. People will say in AA, you're just an arm's length away from a drink. And I suppose on a very technical level, that is true. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of everything that's on offer in here, I'm not an arm's length away from a drink tonight. I'm 12 steps away from a drink. And that's a long way from when I first walked into AA. But don't get me wrong. They're not 12 steps up to anything. They're 12 steps down to humility. I've seen people drink again in AA that I thought would never drink again. And that tells me it's a daily reprieve, not a pardon. And there's certain things I must do if I want to have this way of life. And the only way that I coast in AA is downhill. And eventually at sea level, there'll be a drink waiting for me. But tonight, I don't know about tomorrow. Yesterday's gone, but right here, right now, AA, use people in this program, have given me something between me and the first drink. If you're new tonight, please hear that. And maybe if you're new tonight, you're saying, Paul, these 12 steps and whatever. We have a symbol in AA. It's a triangle inside a circle, and there's three parts to it. Unity, service, and recovery. And I believe if tonight's your very first meeting, you can put all three parts of that triangle into your life right here, right now. Unity. Even in this virtual world, we do together what I can't do alone. I drink, we stay sober, case closed. Even virtual meetings, even these Zoom meetings, many meetings make it easy, few make it hard, none make it impossible. I need you and you need me. As I said, without you, there will be no me. Case closed. Service, even in this virtual world, we used to say in physical meetings, if you put away one more chair than the one you sat on, congratulations, you're doing service. Find some way, even in this virtual world, of doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous, because service will keep me connected. It will keep me tethered. It will keep me connected to you. My disease doesn't want that. Recovery. Maybe the 12 steps seem like a foreign concept. We have slogans in AA. Easy does it. Live and let live. One day at a time. They're like the banisters to the steps. As I put my foot up on step one, those slogans were like the banisters that kept me steady. Now I'm here to tell you from personal experience. Not in the theoretical. From personal experience. You can stay dry on two parts of the triangle. I've done it. You can even stay dry on one part of the triangle. I've done that too. But if I want to get free from the one person I could never get free from, which is me, and try to live in the one place I could never live, which is right here. Now, I got to put all three parts, but it's a small price to pay for the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. I mean, I was out in Vegas one time, and I don't gamble, but I like to watch, you know? And I'm at Caesar's Palace. It's midnight in the graveyard again. I'm in Caesar's Palace, and I'm watching these guys. Maybe you see them on TV, and they're playing high sticks, Texas Hold'em, and the guy gets all his chips, and he says, "I'm all in." And I thought to myself, what a great metaphor for Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to be all in, and I got to be all in every day. Because you know what I found out the hard way? The disease of alcoholism is all in every day. This disease didn't say, "Oh, Paul, there's a COVID pandemic. I'll see you in 6 months." In actual fact, it's working double time. People are saying, "Hey, oh, my disease is in the parking lot doing push-ups." Not my disease. It's been at every meeting I've been at. It's heard everything I've heard, and it just wants to move me away. Like that one, when a plane flies off course, it doesn't have to make a 180-degree turn to get lost. Just 1 degree, but long enough and far enough, and you're completely lost. And that's what alcoholism wants me to do, just to get me away from the center, off to the edge, adrift, almost a glacial drift, that I'm completely lost at the edge of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't do that. Stay with the unity and the service and recovery of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? As I said there, you know, you sometimes, with the steps, sometimes you hear that old saying, you go 10 miles into the forest, you got to go 10 miles out. I don't believe that in AA. If you're sitting out there tonight, and you might be saying, "Paul, you don't know the place I'm in." I don't care how deep and how dark and how painful the forest you're in is. AA tells me, and I will tell you, you're just 12 steps away from a brand new life, my friend. Just 12 steps away. People say, "Oh, I came to AA and I got my life back." I don't want my life back. It sucked. I had it for 30 years. I could do nothing with it. I got a whole brand new life in AA. Are there people from the old drinking days? Yes, but things are different today. Just like that Jamaica Bay that I'm looking at right now. Like it says in the old movie, Days of Wine and Roses, I was lost on a sea of booze. And if there was any coordinates, it was pain and misery. And every once in a while, I'd wash up on dry land because alcoholics were great starters. We're the kings and queens of getting things going again. But everything was always built on sand. And the first drink would always arrive. Not tonight. Because of you people, this program, and everything that's on offer here, my world today is built on concrete. And the world which it will. I thought I'd come into AA and I'd walk between the raindrops. No, there's days of spiritual warfare out there. But if I stay close to the principles of AA, my sober house won't blow down and I won't have to drink no matter what. And I was a guy who had to drink no matter what. And I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous what my problem is. Everything I need to know, I found out at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That my name is Paul and I'm an alcoholic. I got to make that the central fact of my life. If I make that the central fact of my life, things might be going on around me, but I will be okay. If I make that the central fact of my life, that my name is Paul and I'm an alcoholic, because that tells me who I am, what I am, where I am, and what I need to be doing. And if I make that the central fact of my life, I will be okay. In fact, when I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't tell me my life would get better. It says, "Paul, you will get better." And that's been my experience. That things around me might not get better, but I will be okay and I won't have to drink if I make that the central fact. Name, rank, and serial number. My name is Paul and I'm an alcoholic. And it talks about when you apply for a job online, about what the job description is. What is my job description as a sober man in Alcoholics Anonymous? It's very simple. Stay sober and help another alcoholic. Everything else in my life is secondary and tertiary. If I make that the primary point of my life, for some weird reason, my life seems to go okay. Once I start to make other things more important than that central fact, for some strange reason, my life starts to get very rocky. this program is so simple, I almost missed it. And I'm so glad I found out what I am and what I'm not. And my name is Paul, I'm an alcoholic. I got a body that won't let me drink, and a mind that won't let me stop. That one drink creates a thirst I can't quench. And when I control my drinking, I don't enjoy it. And when I enjoy my drinking, I can't control it. Even with your help, I haven't had a drink since August of 1992. One drink tonight, destination unknown. And you took that guy who walked into AA in August of 92, who was powerless and unmanageable, and you brought me through this program, not to a place where I'm powerful, but you brought me to a place where I have a spiritual awakening. As a result of these steps, I want to offer that to the person who's new. You go through this program, I will guarantee you, you're a different person at step 12 than you were at step 1. Whether you want to be or not, you will be a different person, a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. You know, I looked at the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I looked at them on the wall when I first got to AA. I looked at them as information. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I need God. I should take an inventory. And who wants shortcomings? I don't want them. And I realized today that they're not informative. They're transformative. Those 12 steps changed me as a person, having a spiritual awakening, not cashing prizes. But I know who I am today. I know the central fact of my life today. And that's why I continue to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. The program guarantees me, and I will guarantee anybody that's new here tonight, I bet my life on that on a daily basis, that there's a miracle here with your name on it, that nobody can take it from you or nobody can take it for you. Come up and get the life you're meant to live before drink took you down a different road. George Eliot, the writer, says, it's never too late to live the life you are meant to live. And that program guarantees us. Where would you get a guarantee like that in the past tense that you will have had a spiritual awakening? Where else in the world would you get it? I don't know anywhere else. Guaranteed, in black and white, you'll be a different person at step 12 than you were at step 1. But it's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous that the key to success is to stay awake. It's so easy to fall asleep in Alcoholics Anonymous. And just like driving this car, you don't be asleep for a long time for something really bad to happen. So that's what I want to say here. And stay connected and stay awake in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? And, we talk about I talked about George Eliot there. We talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, about the car crashes and the people who go to bed drunk and don't wake up. You know, we don't talk about in AA because it's hard to measure and it's hard to sort of keep track of is the unlived life. And that's the life I was living, the unlived life. We are just drifting through life half drunk. There's no meaning to your life. There's no purpose to your life. There's no rhythm to your life. And then one day, nobody's seen you for 3 or 4 days, and they kick in the door, and you're lying dead on the carpet, and your life came and gone, and not much really happened. That's what I was heading for in August of 1992. And I'm sitting here tonight because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've went from an unlived life to a life well-lived. I don't mean cash and prizes. But that idea, what's the old Oscar Wilde line, the Irish writer? He says he knew the price of everything and the value of nothing. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me the things of real value, the people. Why do I continue to come there? I know how the movie goes, but I wouldn't miss it to see somebody else walking in on the worst night of their life and be given the grace not to drink. And it's so much more than grace. It's mercy. And the definition of mercy that I like the best is entering into the chaos of another person's life. And that's exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous done for me in August of 1992. When I was sitting in that apartment, not 2 miles from here also, drinking around the clock against my own will. Everything's gone. Everybody's gone. And I'm dying in slow motion before my very eyes. And a note came under my door with a man's telephone number on it, actually 2 men's number, from the old South Bronx group here in New York. And they had a mantra, we don't give up on anybody. And they came to my apartment. And I thought they were going to talk about my drinking. Because in August 1992, everybody wanted, well, there wasn't many people left, but those that were seemed to want to talk about my drinking. But they didn't talk about my drinking. They talked about their drinking. And they told story after story. And then the magic happened. Our most prized possession, identification. They talked about them, and I found out about me. And I put my head in my hands, and I said to the guy, I can't live this way anymore. And he says, Paul, this is your lucky day, because you don't have to live this way anymore. Our most prized possession, identification. For anybody that's new here tonight, that's why we speak the language of the heart. Because the spirit in me recognizes the spirit in you. And when I identify with you, whether one day sober or 68 years, when we identify with each other, it brings us closer together. My disease doesn't want that. My disease likes to live from the neck up. That's where the ego lives, from the neck up. Because my disease wants me to compare. She's a woman and I'm a guy. He's from America and I'm from Ireland. He's this and I'm that. My disease always wants me to compare, because comparison will always move me from the center of the circle. I got to ignore that stuff. We speak the language of the heart here. Identification will always bring us closer together. I would like to tell you that, you know, I took that ball and those guys brought me to my first meeting and I scored a touchdown. But I come in here with, our book talks about let go of your old ideas. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of old ideas. Barroom mentality. Barroom mentality that might have served me well at 3 o'clock in the morning, some gin mill in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, but wasn't helping me in here. And I'm here to tell you, you can fool them with the coffee pot at 7:30 at night. I've done it. But you know when untreated alcoholism would come to visit me? 2 o'clock in the morning with the could-haves and the should-haves and the would-haves and the guilt and the shame and remorse. And this is like, I thought about the three parts of the triangle. I'm doing unity. I'm doing service, but I won't do recovery. I won't do door number three. And I had a sponsor, but a name only. And a guy came up to me one night at a meeting. He says, Paul, it wasn't my sponsor, actually. He says, Paul, can I talk to you? I said, sure. He says, you're dying. And you're dying right in the middle of AA. He says, you know what you're like? You're like a starving man at a spiritual banquet. There's all this food on offer, and you're over here living on bread and water. It was like he walked into my bedroom at 3 o'clock in the morning and pulled the covers completely off. That's exactly what I was doing. I was sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, Irish, stoic, don't tell nobody nothing. And this disease, it's a tricky disease. You know, I'd lie there at night because I couldn't sleep. I told you the could-haves, the should-haves. And there would be a book that would appear at my bedside table every night. And that book was entitled, Where I Should Be in My Life By Now. And I'd start to read from it assiduously. You're no good. You're this. You're going to drink again anyway. You might as well be drinking. You never were any good, blah, blah, blah. Every night it would appear at my bedside table, Where I Should Be in My Life By Now. Then I wake up in the morning, the two hefty bags full of garbage will be sitting at the end of the bed called my past, and I drag them through another day of sobriety. And that guy came here to that meeting, but I still wasn't convinced. But God, I'm telling you, he wants to get your attention. He gets your attention. And the next day, he took a cosmic 2x4 to the back of my skull because I'm driving out of the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. This is 2.5 years without a drink. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't owe very much money. 2.5 years into AA, I'm thousands upon thousands of dollars in debt. And I know why today. I'm still trying to fill the hole in my soul with outside stuff. But I got that me on me, and I can't get me off of me. I'm shackled to self by the very nature of this disease because I won't do the third part of the triangle. I won't do recovery. I'm driving out of the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. And a guy cut me off. A lot of the guys have heard this story before, but it just sums up that you don't have to drink in your body to be crazy. and a guy cut me off in rush hour traffic, and I chased after him on the Gowanus Expressway, and I blocked three lanes of traffic. I got out of the car, I'm out of my mind. This is 2.5 years without a drink. NAA, no drink, no program. I've been to jumping off place twice in my life. Once with drink, and once with no drink and no program. Different type of pain, but pain nonetheless. I go back to this guy's car. I don't care who's behind the wheel. It could have been Tony Soprano. I'm out of my mind. It was an Asian man sitting behind the wheel, shaking. His wife's crying in the passenger seat, and his three children are sitting crying in the back of the car. This is 2.5 years with no drink. I apologized at his door, and I got into my own car, and I hit my head off the steering wheel, and I said to myself, I'm crazier off drink than I was on it. And in some respects, that's true. And I drove to my sponsor's house in name only. And I told him what I just told you. He was sober a long time, but you can only help somebody who wants to be helped. You can bring a horse to water. You can make him thirsty, but you know how that analogy ends. And he was smoking a big cigar, and he says, Paul, how old were you when this happened? I says, Jimmy, this happened 20 minutes ago. What do you mean, how old? Maybe we're getting like lost in translation here. I got to get you hooked on phonics, the Shamrock version, bring you up to speed. But he coined a phrase of Harry Tebow, a great friend of AA, a non-alcoholic, but understood alcoholics at a pretty visceral level. Coined a phrase for people like me, His Majesty the Baby. He says, Paul, you're like a child in a man's body. He said, I got news for you. They don't make cribs in your size. You're His Majesty the Baby. Lisa said, Altie, I'm going to tell you something. You've been ducking and diving these 12 steps. If you don't get into this program, if you don't get free of the one guy you can't get free from, which is you, if you don't start living in the one place you have to live, which is right here, right now, your life's going to go on lived, my friend, even in sobriety, and that's on you. He got my attention. The next day, I put pen to paper. Is it nice to do the steps and get a full knowledge of your condition? Absolutely. But you know, my life caught on fire. You know, my life took on new meaning when I turned around and tried to help another man. That's when great events came to pass. Is it nice to do the program and find out who you are and who you're not? But I think, and this is my own opinion. This is not A's opinion. This is my opinion. I think somewhere, someday, I'm going to be asked one question. Excuse me, what did you do with the gift that was given to you? Well, I worked on myself, and I worked on myself some more. Look at me, am I wonderful? I'll ask you again, what did you do with the gift that was given to you? Shame on me if I put it in my back pocket and ride off into the sunset. There was somebody at the door of Alcoholics Anonymous for me, and I got to be there at the door for somebody else. Like it says in Bill's story, the main reason we have these meetings is to show the new person our way of life. Hey, without the newcomer, it's just a room full of noise. It makes no sense to me. The whole program, the whole deal is predicated on helping the next alcoholic. And I'm sitting here in the last few minutes. As I said, do I have a perfect life? Absolutely not. Far from it. Perfection is a hope, a dream, an illusion, and get a guy like me drunk. But I will tell you this for the people that are new. When I think about drinking, I don't think about those early days. Those last days of my drinking. Just like Bill Wilson. For some reason, it always seemed to be November. And it always seemed to be bleak. And I'd be sitting there in the apartment drinking. I mean, barroom drinking was a long ago memory. Drinking booze, I go on these long drunks, and I would see people going to work and coming home from work, like Bill says in his story, that maudlin depression. And I knew what real life looked like, but I just couldn't do it. And I was sitting there drinking, and I wasn't drinking to have a good time, I was drinking for unconscious time. If I just drink enough booze, maybe the pain that is my life will just subside for a couple of hours. And I put the bottle to my lips. And I think to myself, how the hell did it ever get this bad? What the hell happened to me? What happened to that 7 or 8 year old kid that love nothing more than to run out the door with a soccer ball under his arm and play soccer morning, noon, and night. What the hell happened to him? And I just say, well, I don't know. And I just put that bottle to my lips and reach for looking for unconscious time. You come to my house today, you won't see perfection. If you want to see perfection, go to the house next door. But you'll see life happening. If you'd have come to my house in August of 92, you'd have seen a guy dying before your very eyes. You come to my house today, you'll see life on life terms. Not perfect. You'll see arguments, squabbles, teenage daughters, financial worries. But you'll see life happening. You'll see life happening. And it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a friend of mine says, and I love it, at the end of his drinking, it's like being in a car that's spinning out of control. And you reach for the steering wheel, and there is none. What a terrible way to live. So I said to myself today, I mean, I'm telling you, richly blessed to have this, not cash and prizes, but knowing who I am, that my name is Paul, I'm an alcoholic. And once in a while, in my dreams, that little boy will run to me. That little 8-year-old boy will run to me in my dreams. And I'll put my arm around him. And I'll say, don't worry. Everything's all right. I'm sober today. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've met these beautiful men, these beautiful women. I've got this program that works under all conditions. We're going to be okay. Everything's all right. And I tell you, if I could live to talk for another hour, I couldn't tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. The memories, good things that I don't deserve. Thank God Alcoholics Anonymous is not a meritocracy by where your good deeds out there get you a place in here. You'd have a different speaker, and that's not false humility. But I think of the memories, the good memories, the golden memories that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me in this sober life, more than I deserve. And there's a story I want to end on. I remember when I was about, my daughter was about, the oldest girl was about 3 years of age. So I was sober probably, well, I was, I don't know, 14 or 15 years. And I took her to an amusement. We're up in Maine. It was a beautiful New England day, almost at the end of summer. You know, just a hint of fall in the air, just like today in New York, a beautiful blue azure sky. And I took her to this little amusement park for children. It was the first time she was ever in an amusement park. And that little Ferris wheel. And we're sitting this Ferris wheel together. And the Ferris wheel was going round. I come up the top and you could, it was up in a place called York. And you could see out on the ocean. It was just beautiful. One of those beautiful days. And as children do, she's about, I don't know, 3 or 4. As children do, totally unsolicited or unprompted, she put her hands up in the air and she says, Daddy, Daddy, this is the greatest day of my life. And I love you so much. My heart almost exploded because that's what I was looking for in whiskey. I came close a few times. It looked like the real deal. It felt like the real deal, but it wasn't. It was bogus. It was counterfeit as phony. That moment with that child that day, that was the real spiritual, authentic moments that a sober life gives you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not saying every day is 24/7 on a first wheel with a child sitting like that. But man, the good memories, the good life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, oh my God. Little did I know, stumbling into these doors of August of 1992, would I get the ability to live two lives in one lifetime. I thank you for my sobriety because I know and I hope I never forget that I cannot do this alone. We stay sober, and I'll drink again. Thank you so much, David. That's all I'll say.
Paul, thank you so much. I'm going to allow everyone the opportunity to unmute and thank Paul. That was amazing.
Awesome. Thank you. That was awesome,
thank
Paul.
You.
Fantastic
thank
story.
You so much.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. That was incredible.
Thanks, Paul. I loved it.
Thanks, Paul, for bringing the enthusiasm.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
The enthusiasm.
Thanks, right Paul.
Go New York. Go New York.
All right, that was great. Right on, thank you, sir. That was great. Thank you, sir.
Very good, Paul.
Thank you. Donnie, good to see you, my friend.
to let you know that Danny Boy and Castle Walton's over 70 years old.
Danny, good man yourself.
Just amazing. All right, I'm going to mute everybody, take the meeting back, give Paul a break for a moment. And I've placed a link to the PayPal account in the chat window. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free from outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Also, Larry is taking your questions under the user questions. Please keep them coming. We've got a couple, several, I think, but we could use a few more. Our common welfare, a word about safety, our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I would be happy to take a couple of announcements by show of hands. All right, seeing none, we have got Val D and who is it, Amy? We got two great speakers for our home group tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Simple Actions. We're on step 10 tomorrow night. So tune back in for that. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be hanging out in this meeting after we close. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you do not have to leave that way. Or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. So that being it, I don't see any hands. We'll reconvene. Mr. Paul, thank you so much again. I would look forward to this all week, man. We have a question. What has practicing step 6 looked like for you?
Well, step 6, you know, they talk about the three basic instincts in Alcoholics Anonymous, to be financially secure, emotionally secure, to procreate. The sex instinct. And for me, a defect of character, if I have an obsession with the basic instinct, I have defects of character, you know. And this thing about I'm working on my defects of character, I think it's a bit of a misnomer. It's only through God's help that I can work on that I work. But the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that you get the awareness. Anthony DeMello says that awareness, awareness, awareness. I know it's not AA approved, but there's a little book says about the rogues gallery. I might know what your rogues gallery is, but I know what mine is. And I have the awareness today, you know, and I get the chance to work on the opposite of what the defect is, you know. So believe me, I have obsessions in all those areas, and it's through prayer, meditation, and I'm a sort of a guy, nothing beats a feeler but a try. And I love that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get so many opportunities on a daily basis to work on these, as I said, to have God help me with these defects of character. About 20 of them I get a day, 18 of them I completely miss, 2 I see, 1 I make some progress on, 1 I don't. That's been the story of my sobriety. Perfection, as I said, is a hope, a dream, an illusion. I love that in Alcoholics Anonymous that we strive for averageness. I'm not saying underachievement is a virtue worth striving for, but we don't drink no matter what, and everything else. I love the fact that it says in our literature, we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. We are not saints. No one among us can claim perfect adherence to these principles. Thank God for those words in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That gives a guy like me a second, a third, and a fourth chance, and that's just today. So thank you for your question. I hope that helped you.
Thank you, Paul. We have a question regarding the 10th step. Would you like to share a little bit about your practice on step 10?
Step 10, for me, I love the fact that step 10 says when we were wrong, not if we were wrong. It assumes the fact that we're out there. You know, it says, Einstein says, a body at rest, you know, remains. That's not me. I'm out there in the world dealing with life on life's terms. And this 10th step for me, it's a, I've done the inventory, the big one in four and five, but this is a spot check for me to be able to stop my day at any time and hit that reset button. And I've heard conversations in diners about what promptly is. As far as I'm concerned, I gotta keep my side of the street clear all the time. You know, and there's an old joke in AA that says, if you're going to, about that promptly thing, if you're going to eat crow in Alcoholics Anonymous, eat it when it's fresh, not when it's been lying on the sidewalk for a few weeks, because it doesn't look very appealing. So the whole key of the 10th step is for me to keep my side of the street spiritually clear. In fact, the dirty the other side is, the clear my side has to be. So I lived that way before, carrying all the yesterdays into today. I refuse to live that way today in Alcoholics Anonymous. The 10th step gives me the opportunity to wear life like a loose garment. I'm a great believer. There's friends of mine who are sober a while and they'll keep me going. They say, Paul, you're a real squeaky wheel. And I believe the squeaky wheel gets the oil. If you're in my life, you know what's going on in my life today. I got to have a clear side of the street. What's the old legend of Bluebeard? You were allowed to go anywhere in his house, and there was one room you weren't allowed to go into. And of course, you know it was in that one room. I can't have a one room to myself in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be actively sponsored. I can't be, oh, look at this room, and look at this room, and then keep this little secret room to myself. And that's what that 10th step helps me to do, that I'm not waking up in the morning anymore with those two hefty bags full of garbage sitting on the end of the bed waiting for me. I try to wear life like a loose garment today, and the 10th step helps me. So I try to keep my side of the street clean. I don't get into the semantics so promptly. I do it right away because I want to be free and I want to stay free in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 10th step helps me to do that.
Oh, thank you. You definitely talked about this in your story, and it's such an important point, but there's a question here. Those times you got off the beam in sobriety, self-will run riot, what happened? How did you get back on track?
I would like to tell you that I got back on track because my sponsor told me, or because whatever. Unfortunately, when I get off track, I have to wait till the dogs are right here. I'll tell you one little story that just sums up, and I didn't mention this when I was talking. I went through, and it sums this up, at getting off the beam. I was 20 years sober, and I went through a very difficult divorce. And there was another guy involved, and I took my will back. And my sponsor was telling me, take the high road. And I didn't want to take the high road. And I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous that it's easy to do the things you want to do. I get free in Alcoholics Anonymous doing things I don't want to do, or more importantly, doing things I don't believe in. And one of them, my sponsor was saying to me, I want you to pray for this guy. And I said, I'm not praying for him. Do you know what this guy done to me? And I paid a heavy price for doing that. I didn't drink, but I give this man my appetite. I give him my serenity. I give him my sleep. I give him my peace of mind. The only thing I didn't give him was my sobriety. And I paid a heavy price. And I bottomed out. This is 20 years sober. And thank God for the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you know when you get a guy like me in trouble, especially when you're sober a while? Spiritual pride. How can I go to the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and tell them my life's falling apart right in the middle of AA? But I better do that. I don't have to go into the details or do a PowerPoint presentation, but somebody has to know what time of day it is in my spiritual world. That's why I need to be actively sponsored. What's the old saying in AA? When you're inside the jar, you can't read the label. I need somebody standing outside the jar who can say to me, Paul, this is what you have to do. And unfortunately, I got off the beam that time. But the pain of living with untreated alcoholism and not being willing to forgive that guy. See, I found the hard way in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe it today with my heart and soul. There's physical laws of the universe and the spiritual laws of the universe. And I believe they are as fixed. Now, I would never try to cheat a physical law of the universe. I would never try to cheat the law of gravity. But I tried to cheat the law of forgiveness. I'll forgive him, but just this much. I won't forgive her. And I paid a heavy price with that situation at 20 years sober because I wouldn't forgive that guy. And I was shackled to self at 20 years sober. And eventually, through the pain, I did it. And I'll just end in this story by taking actions that I didn't want to take. I was sitting a couple of years later, and my daughter was graduating from the eighth grade, and she went to a Catholic school here in Rockaway, and each family got half a pew, and the church was packed. Now, my ex-wife married that guy, and I'm happy for them, and I wish them well. I got remarried myself, like David was saying, of a little two-year-old daughter. At this stage, she was just a brand new baby. So I got to the service late, and I could only squeeze in at the end of the pew. And who's sitting there but this guy? This guy who had given my sleep, my serenity, my peace of mind, my appetite to. Now, I had to squeeze in at the baby in the stroller in the aisle. I had to squeeze in. You couldn't have put a piece of computer paper between his shoulder and my shoulder. That's how close we were sitting together. But I don't know what was going on inside of his head. But I was sitting at that moment in time in that pew, and I was free. I had no thoughts, no emotional connection, no resentment to this guy. I was free. And I thought to myself, man, these guys are right in Alcoholics Anonymous. But sobriety's like that sometimes. It's lived forward but understood backwards. And I realized by taking those actions that I didn't want to take and doing things I didn't want to do, it got me out of that terrible place that I got myself into at 20 years sober because I refused to take the spiritual high road. I got there eventually. And thank God I got there because of good sponsorship and good men and women who helped me. And that's what I want to say to anybody who's new, maybe struggling there tonight. I found out the hard way. If you're going through something alone in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's because you've made a conscious decision to do that. There's not one thing in this world that you have to go through alone. And by reaching out to my sponsor and telling exactly how I felt that time with that resentment, I took actions I didn't want to do and got free from that guy to the point I was sitting so close to him and I had no resentment with him. And I thought to myself, this program works under all conditions if I'm willing to work it. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a question that says, how do you balance living for AA and living for the life you now have through AA?
That is a $64,000 question, as I say. There's an old saying in AA, and it sounds like a no-brainer. And it says, don't let the life that AA gives you keep you from going to AA. And it's that balance. That's where you need sponsorship, that balance. Like, because AA, I will guarantee anybody that's new here tonight, AA will give you a life. It's guaranteed. It will give you a life. But the key to success in Alcoholics Anonymous is not letting the things that AA gives you, which it will, keep you from going to the very place that give them to you. And my sponsor would drill that into me, Paul, don't think that you got this job. Don't think that you got this marriage or you got those degrees or you got those children. You got those as a result of being a sober member in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where you need sponsorship to find that balance. I remember one time, for me it was so clear, I was asked to speak at something one time, and my daughter, and it was a big event. and I was asked to speak at it. And my daughter was graduating from another program. And I had to call the guy up and say, listen, I'm willing to come there on Saturday, but I can't be there Friday night. I have to be somewhere else. And I explained to him, he says, absolutely, Paul. So I thought to myself, if I go there on Friday night and I'm telling them how wonderful my life is in AA and my daughter's 500 miles away, walking down, collecting a certificate, and I'm not there, there's something wrong with that too. So it's finding that balance. And that's where we need sponsorship. But as I said there, it sounds like a no-brainer. The next thing you'll be saying, Paul, the next thing you'll be telling me, it's going to get dark later on. But it's so insidious to let the life that AA gives you keep you from going to the very place to give it to you. Now, I know this is purely anecdotal. I was sitting in a clubhouse one time in Florida, and there had a list of anniversaries up on the wall. And this guy says to me, you notice something about these anniversaries? And this is not empirical evidence. This is anecdotal. Look at all the anniversaries between 1 and 5. And look at all the anniversaries from 10 onwards. And between like 6 and 7 and 8, there was hardly any anniversaries. He says, you know why that is? Because they've proved that it takes about 7 years for a guy walking in off the street or a girl homeless to put their lives together in AA. And then the slide happens, the drift. You get the house, get the relationship, get the job you always wanted, get the white picket fence, dog and the cat and whatever. And all of a sudden, the slide begins around 7 or 8 years and you stop going to the very place that give you those things. I know it's purely anecdotal, but I got to be so careful to realize that Alcoholics Anonymous give me these things and I have to keep that balance, and that's where I need sponsorship. So thank you for that question.
Yeah, that's my story too. So can you recommend a golf course?
How old was Donnie boy?
What does love and tolerance mean to you?
It's funny, like, they talk about unconditional love in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you something I learned about love recently. And my sponsor hit me over the head with it. I was a great believer in, and this used to be one of my tired lines in Alcoholics Anonymous. I would say something like, you know, I can be so much more benevolent to a person I hardly know at the coffee pot that I am to myself. And after a while, he says, Paul, I'm not buying this anymore. This idea that you're so, if you cannot love yourself, if you cannot forgive yourself in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't care how much love you're given to complete strangers at the coffee pot. This program, if you're not able to love yourself as well, and who you are, then what the hell, what's all this love that you're giving out? And that was this was just recently. But I used to run that line all the time. Oh, I'm so hard on myself, but I'm such more loving to a complete stranger. And he stopped me dead in my tracks, you know. But I see tolerance. That's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned to love in AA so I could love outside of AA. I learned to tolerate in AA so I could tolerate outside of AA. We learn these lessons in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous so we can practice them outside. I know some of the guys in Northern Ireland are still on there. And I got sober in New York, but my brother is sober 20-odd years back in Northern Ireland. And we had that low-level civil war going on over there. And I've been to meetings in Northern Ireland in some of the darkest days of the Troubles. And the Catholics would all know who the Protestants were, and the Protestants would all know who the Catholics were in the meeting. But everything else would be left in the parking lot. And we'd talk about our common problem and our common solution, and we have love for each other and tolerance for each other. I saw it personified in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that love and tolerance and forgiveness. You know, it's funny how we hear, you know, I knew, my sponsor just said this recently, this lexicon of words that we learn in AA, I mean, I'd heard these words before. It wasn't like I'd never heard the word love before or the word tolerance, but you hear them in a new way and you see them practice before your very eyes. I was at a meeting one time, I want to tell this story, in Northern Ireland, years ago at a house party. A guy I was with, and he had an argument with somebody at this house party. And the guy went to a drawer and got a large knife and stuck it in my friend's neck right down to the hilt. Almost killed him. In the next 3 months, he would get the last rites two or three times. His life was never the same. He could only turn his head slightly to the side, could only lift his arm this much. And years go by, and I get sober, and he gets sober, and the guy that stabbed and went to jail for a number of years. So years later, we're sitting, I'm a sober a couple of years, I'm home on vacation, and I go to a meeting with this guy who had been stabbed in the neck. And we're sitting in this meeting in Northern Ireland, in a small town, in a provincial town, in an insular neighborhood. And you know how meetings are, like, before the meeting started, there's all this buzz and talking. And it was a cold November night, and the door opened up. And who walked in but the guy who had stabbed him in the neck all those years before? And the meeting fell quiet, because about 80% of the people knew the story, knew the people involved, and realized the significance of what was just happening before our very eyes. And my friend Paddy got up, not for a plum or for the a round of applause. He got up and he went and got a half cup of tea and he put it into the guy's trembling hand, who looked way the worse for wear for drinking. And he patted him on the shoulder and he called him by his first name and he said, "It's good to see you." And I was driving home with Paddy and I says, "Paddy, if I hadn't have seen that with my own eyes, that you did that for the man that almost took your life," he says, "Paul, if that's the price I have to pay to be free in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the price I'm willing to pay." Now, the story has a sad ending. That guy never did get sober, and he died in an alcoholic seizure of a brain hemorrhage. But my friend Paddy is still sober today. But you people showed me. You showed me love. You showed me unconditional love. And that's the wonderful thing about AA. We'd rather see a sermon than hear one. And I saw it that night. I saw real love. A guy walking up to another guy who almost took his life and saying, "It's good to see you at a meeting. I hope you stay sober. And here's a half cup of tea for you." A front row seat for the very best that humanity has to offer. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, my friends. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, do you have favorite sponsees?
Let me see if there's any of them on here tonight. There's one of them on here, and he's my favorite. You know, it's funny you used to say this question, because my original sponsor, and he would sponsor a lot of people. He was the first guy to get 50 years here in Rockaway. Everybody knew him. He was a bit of, you know, everybody knew him in this area anyway. So he was my sponsor. I remember one time I was calling him, and he wasn't answering the phone. And I'm like, you know, I went by the door a few times, and nobody answered the door. So right away, I started living up, you know, where my disease wants me to live from the neck up. I'm sober a couple of years. I'm thinking, I know what's happening. He's in that house with all his other sponsees. And they're all sitting there eating pound cake and donuts. And somebody's saying, "Hey, where's Paul? Ah, forget Paul. Have another donut, you know?" And then all this scenario built up in my head. And I finally seen him at our home group. This is the way before cell phones and these things, guys, you know? And I says, "Jimmy," and I'm ready to go into a whole diatribe. I was calling from a payphone and knocking your door. And he says, "Paul, whoa, I'm only sober a few months." He says, "Paul, your family just knocked the door and come on in." I almost burst into tears. Nobody was saying that to me in August of 1992 when I was drinking. He says, "Paul, your family just knocked the door and come on in." And I learned a big thing then about unconditional love. So I really have no, I mean, there's some guys are, I don't know if easy is the right word, there's some guys go through those steps willingly, and there's some guys go through them kicking and screaming. But I'm still the guy that they ask to take through them, and it behooves me to do it. And the old thing is, I always get as much, if not more, out of helping them than they ever helped me. So sponsees, and I'll just say that story to go backtrack. When I was 20 years sober, going through that divorce, a sponsee of mine says, "Paul, I don't want to call you. You've got so much you're going through right now. And I says, please don't stop calling. In fact, call more. Call me twice as many times. Because I realize without you, there's no me. So I'm telling you, the sponsees that God has put in my life, I'm telling you, in the days, those dark, what's it say in our book, the certain low spots that lie ahead, they're coming. And thank God for the sponsees in my life, because they've been the bright spot and a lot of those certain low spots that came in my sobriety. And I thank them for it, even the ones that are on here tonight.
We are at the end of our time, my brother. I got one question to close on. If you could do a few minutes on the 12th step in the current environment, you know, how are we approaching the newcomer? How are we taking people through the steps? What's that looking like for you?
Well, as I said there earlier on the meeting, that contempt prayer investigation, Emmett Fox says the captain is on the bridge, and thank God he is, because there's people getting sober right now who have never sat in a physical meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought to myself when I said at the start of my talk, I thought, oh my goodness, but God's in charge and he knows what he's doing. I don't think, is this an alternative for AA for the rest of our lives? No, but this is what God has asked us to do now. And it's so amazing that the 12th step is going on here under the circumstances and the conditions we are through. So it says, like it says in our literature, I love that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's so prophetic, modem to modem, which is what we're doing right now. Now, would I love to be sitting next to you, David, having a cup of tea at the end of the meeting? Absolutely. But this is where we are now. And I see A going on. I mean, I know the challenges about anonymity and all the protocols and so forth. But our bottom line, what is our bottom line in Alcoholics Anonymous? What is our job description? Is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. And from where I'm sitting, I see that happening, even in the virtual world. I see people getting, might be socially distant, but still spiritually connected. I see God working through this program. I see people getting sober. I'm doing step work with people. Like you said, Dave, at the start, we're not sitting together. It's just strange doing a fourth and fifth step with the guy through the Zoom platform. Yes, but it still goes on, because even the Zoom platform, there's always that third person there, and we know who that is, the higher power. So as long as we are about our Father's business and doing what we're asked to do to carry this message, we will be okay, and Alcoholics Anonymous will be okay. And like a friend of mine says, who's sober a long time, and I love the simplicity of the old-timers. The newcomers are happy to be sober. The old-timers, guys like me, you got to watch for middle management. But he's an old-timer, and he says, Paul, we'll get through this. And that's what I believe. We'll get through this, but we're getting through it right now. We're still helping alcoholics. And this eventually will end, and we'll go back, and we'll be reminiscing. Hey, you remember the Zoom meetings? But this is what God's asked us to do now, and I'm so glad that we have them. When you think about it, back in the early, mid-1930s, there was three meetings in the world, Cleveland, Akron, and New York. And now we've got all these meetings, and we're still doing our 12-step work. So, guys, thanks for inviting me into your Zoom room tonight. It's been a privilege and an honor, David. And so good to see you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you. All right. I want to thank everyone who participated. And I'm going to ask a volunteer to read the last three paragraphs in A Vision for You. But I probably didn't give you the capability of unmuting. So let me do that. Larry, why don't you go ahead and read that, please? All right, I'm going to read it, and then I'll.
No, I was totally reading it, but I was muted.
Oh, okay.
Let's try it again. Larry, alcoholic. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, You cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and the great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you, my brother. Thank everybody who participated. I am now going to allow people to unmute. If they would like, we'll have the Lord's Prayer, and then you'll have the opportunity to thank Paul again. So let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Lord's Prayer, please. Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thy is the kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.